how's school going?
Good. It's going really well. Good. Yeah, not as crazy as I thought it would be, so I'm happy about
good,
that.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad. All right. On this episode of Doula to Doula, we're talking about October Awareness Month. Welcome, and thanks for joining us on another episode of Doula to Doula, where we talk about pregnancy, birth, motherhood, and the doula life. I'm Exie Bueller, a certified labor and birth doula and childbirth educator. I'm also a licensed and board certified massage therapist and owner of Tranquil Touch Therapeutic Massage for Women. My co-host is Chana Vaughn.
I'm a doula in training, just beginning my journey as a birth professional. Together, we're going to help each other grow, give each other support, and see how we apply our doula skills to everyday life. We hope you enjoy the show.
This is episode 8.
We made it past episode 7.
We did. I think by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah.
This September and October have been crazy months for both of us. So
yeah.
I was thinking with this episode, you know, gosh, so much has happened. Just, I know personally and also on just the whole scale of things publicly. October's a big awareness month. I don't know if you...
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's like infant or pregnancy loss awareness month. It's domestic violence awareness. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot that goes on in the month of October.
Yeah, yeah, there is. And so I was thinking, you know, of course, and breast cancer month.
Right,
right.
Correct.
Everybody
yep.
knows.
Uh-huh.
So I think probably that one gets the most publicity, right? Like everybody's buying, you know, pink stuff and
right.
wears pink around and all of that. And my mother is a breast cancer survivor.
Oh, I didn't
and
know that.
My grandmother, yeah, and my grandmother also had breast cancer. So it's a cause that's near to me.
Mm-hmm.
However, it outshadows, I think, some of these other very important things that need to be brought to the surface. And with Chrissy Teigen and John Legend going through their loss, mm-hmm. was it last week?
It was last week.
Yeah. I think the pregnant and in pregnancy and infant loss week, which are the color of that ribbon is blue and pink.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the same ribbon that's used for sudden infant death syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also one on the list for October. And I think that it was very brave and courageous of them to be, I know she's a very public person. I don't really follow her all that much mm-hmm. myself, but I know that she's been documenting her struggles with this pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was very brave of them to share the part that was most painful for them, because very many birth givers and partners experience loss, and it is often not acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
And it also is dependent, I think, on how far along the pregnancy
mm-hmm.
was. I don't even know how far along she was. Do you know?
I think she was halfway through her pregnancy, so probably around the 20th week or so. And I follow her on Instagram. It's really like I love all things pregnancy and childbirth. So as soon as I find out someone's expecting, I'm like, okay, I'm following their pregnancy, and like I get all excited. So I have to say, as someone who's experienced pregnancy loss before, I was so grateful that she shed some light on it in such a public way. She didn't have to do that. I know there's mixed comments and, you know, on the internet about people feeling like she should have let that be a private moment, but I feel like it's often one of those things that people expect you to just sweep under the rug, and emotions should not have to be suppressed or swept under the rug just because it makes someone else feel uncomfortable in every situation. I feel like, mm-hmm. you know, the loss of a child, regardless of the gestation, is something that women should be able to they should be able to grieve in a way that is comforting to them. I wouldn't tell someone how to mourn the loss of anyone. And it's amazing to me that people have such a loud voice about how Chrissy and her husband should or should not mourn the loss of their child.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And as someone who has not personally experienced a pregnancy loss myself, my heart just goes out to anyone who has experienced it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as many people who have kept up with us know, I'm a certified prenatal massage therapist in addition to being a childbirth educator, I cannot talk today, and birth doula. I always ask, you know, which number pregnancy this is. Mm-hmm. I don't ask which number baby this is mm-hmm. until I've gotten the first answer, because I have had clients who have had one or even multiple losses in amongst the live births. Mm-hmm. And it's important to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's really interesting is I had a couple that I have worked with as a doula with them for more than one pregnancy, and they had experienced a loss. And when we talked about it, they were like, they almost kind of, you can tell the way that our culture is set up mm-hmm. because they were like acknowledging that she had been pregnant enough for them to start putting their hopes and dreams mm-hmm. in the future. But it ended early enough or soon enough within the pregnancy gestational time that they felt like it didn't warrant acknowledgement mm. by telling their family members, by telling their friends. And so they just kind of swept it under the rug kind of, but you could tell, I could tell when I was talking to them, and it was through video. So it wasn't even an in-person kind of, I felt their energy. Mm-hmm. I could see it on their faces mm-hmm. that they had unresolved grief from that loss. Mm-hmm. And the partner, oftentimes the partners, even just with regular, normal, low risk pregnancies and births, they're usually like secondary almost. Mm-hmm. They're treated as a secondary part of the equation.
Exactly.
And when it comes to a loss, a lot of times they're not acknowledged at all
mm-hmm.
by society, but also even by themselves. Well, I mm-hmm. wasn't the one that was pregnant. I wasn't the one that had the loss, mm-hmm. you know, and they're speaking, of course, from the physical aspect, but there is definitely an emotional aspect to it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that people are aware that this month, it happens, of course, in every month of the year, but this is the month of awareness for it. So mm-hmm. if you see a blue and pink ribbon, that is an awareness of either pregnancy and infant loss or sudden infant death syndrome.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like that's probably the proper word. How many times I'm with or I speak with women that I've known for ages, and then the subject of childbirth and pregnancy comes up, and it's like you find out that someone suffered a loss, and you're like, oh my, I didn't know that. Oh yeah, and see how common it is, but how it's kept so quiet. And I remember during one of my pregnancies, my doctor told me, you know, don't tell anyone until after you reach 12 weeks. That's the safe zone. And I just thought like, oh, you know, I hadn't really thought about it that way. And I did end up going, like, losing that pregnancy. And I did tell people because I was excited about it, and having to tell them that pregnancy was no longer continuing. Oh, it was so difficult. And then you deal with their emotions and your emotions at the same time too. So it's really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even imagine. And I think that it's really brave also of you to talk about it.
Thank you.
You know, yeah. So, you know, and I have been, of course, doing this deep dive into trauma. Mm-hmm. For myself, as somebody who has suffered multiple traumas of varying t-
types mm-hmm. throughout my life, mm-hmm. but also because I want to help clients who are experiencing trauma. And so October is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So anyone who follows my social media is going to be seeing posts about domestic violence, because that is the particular need that I feel should be brought to the forefront by the voice that I have. Mm-hmm. So the ribbon color for domestic violence is purple. And that is like infant and pregnancy loss. It is something that people shy away from discussing. Mm-hmm. It makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And before we met up today, I was catching up on a couple of, I signed up for the Collective Trauma Summit, which is like, I think my third summit around trauma mm-hmm. that I've done since this whole pandemic began. And I particularly wanted to key into the speaker, Dr. Gabor Mate, who is a trauma and addiction specialist. And he just had some really, you know, amazing things to say. And there's a lot of, we're all experiencing a trauma right now mm-hmm. with this whole pandemic and whatever. And it's very interesting because in one of my previous summits that I attended, Dr. Lissa Rankin spoke on the sacred medicine for post-traumatic growth. She's an author and a whole health practitioner, and she does a lot of TEDx talks.
I love a good TEDx talk. I YouTube them all the time. I love them. They're so interesting to me. And it's like, I can go down the rabbit hole kind of and like watch one and then I'm the next one. And I'm like, okay, Chani, you got to get up. This is enough of
this. Yeah, absolutely. Right, especially when YouTube autoplays.
Like, yeah, it's like, oh, thanks. They know yeah. what I want to watch.
Yeah, there's also a podcast stream of TED Talks. Ooh. So you can just roll from one into the other.
Oh, yeah.
But it was interesting because she was talking about ACEs, which is the acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And there's a screening that is done for children through this. But she talks about trauma. And it's interesting because I think the majority of us look at trauma as an event. That was a traumatic thing for mm-hmm. you to go through, is what we frequently hear. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one person can suffer through an event and come out and be like, that was a horrible thing to experience, but they don't have the traumatic emotional response to it, or mm-hmm. even the traumatic physical response to it. Because as a massage therapist, from that perspective, we hold trauma in our bodies. And mm-hmm. so I encounter it in many ways just from the massage and body work, you know, perspective. Mm-hmm. But she talks about trauma as being something that is, one, perceived as a threat to a person's physical survival, two, overwhelms their coping capacity, that produces a sense of powerlessness. Three, it produces a sense of isolation and aloneness. And four, it violates a person's expectations. Mm. So when we're talking like from the subject of infant and pregnancy loss, you know, your expectation is to carry this pregnancy through. Mm-hmm. And when you don't, when that pregnancy ends early, that's a violation of your expectations. So just to kind of give people an understanding of how the definition of trauma is actually being defined by her. And then she gives a secondary definition as, and of course I'm paraphrasing because these are my notes that mm-hmm. I took from her talk. Any occurrence which, when we think back to it or when it is triggered by some present event, it evokes difficult emotions and or physical symptoms or sensations, giving rise to negative beliefs, desires, fantasies, compulsions, obsessions, addictions, or disassociation, and it blocks the development of positive qualities and a spiritual connection and fractures human wholeness.
Oh, wow.
It's powerful, isn't it?
That is so powerful. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. So in the Collective Trauma Summit that I've been listening to, there's a lot of talk about trauma that is experienced by the whole of society or by groups of people, mm-hmm. as well as there have been a number of talks on the epigenetics and the transgenerational trauma that gets passed on genetically mm-hmm. from parent to child, all the way they've done studies to the third generation. Mm-hmm. So one generation can experience trauma and you see the effects of that showing up in the third generation down.
Wow.
If that trauma has never been resolved.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting when we're talking about something like pregnancy and infant loss, whether that be during the pregnancy, early after birth, or with SIDS. Mm-hmm. There's also the trauma of you've carried a pregnancy through to a live birth and that baby is in the NICU.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that is not something that most people expect. So right. that can also, and it doesn't always bring these feelings of trauma. That's the thing about trauma, going back to her first definition, it's a perception mm-hmm. of a threat. So it's less of an event and more of how we perceive that event within ourselves.
Wow.
And that's why birth trauma can have such a wide range. You can have somebody who has a vaginal, unmedicated, maybe very precipitous or fast birth and come away from that seemingly from the outside view, perfect birth, mm-hmm. and they can feel traumatized. And you can have somebody who had, for whatever reason, had a cesarean birth mm-hmm. and they can come out of it and say, I'm satisfied with the experience. I feel good about the choices that were made, mm-hmm. even though it was physically, you know, the body itself was violated as far as being, you know, incisioned and mm-hmm. all of that. They don't feel that it was traumatic.
Yeah. That makes
so
much
it's
sense.
Just been, yeah, it's just been really, really fascinating for me, to look through
yeah.
and to kind of just piece it out and dissect it in my own life from the traumas that I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's been really interesting.
Back to what you were saying about like the having a vaginal birth and a cesarean, it reminded me of when I was pregnant with Yorley and I had someone say to me like, oh yeah, why don't you just have your doctor schedule you for a C-section? And I thought, well, no, you know, I want to have my baby, you know, vaginally. Well, but because then you'll know the dude, you'll know the exact date, you can plan everything. I did it with all my kids. You just, you know, like it was, they couldn't believe that I wanted to spontaneously go into labor and deliver vaginally. And I couldn't believe that they wanted me to, you know, schedule that portion of my life, in such a way I hadn't even considered that as a option, you know? So it just, yeah. And that's what they thought was normal and they were comfortable with that. And that was totally fine. I'm glad that that worked out for them. And I'm glad that my situation worked out for me too. So it's just two different, completely different sides of the coin. Yeah. I think it's really trauma being more of, it is unique to each individual typically. And I don't think that a lot of people, I don't know if they're aware of that or they feel like, oh, that situation sounds traumatic to me. It must have been traumatic to you. Or even within my own family, to be honest, the way that our mother passed away was very traumatic. And I think we all handled it a little bit differently. And we used to try to kind of, we felt like we should all be united in how we felt and how we were dealing with those emotions. And we had to sort through the fact that each one of us could have, even though we went through the same event, could have different experiences within that space.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think two things about that is we both have two children
mm-hmm.
and while yours are different genders, you have a daughter and mm-hmm. a son. I have two sons. So you would, you know, we always think, well, you're the same parents. How can your kids be so different?
Mm-hmm.
But really, we're not.
Correct.
We are not, whether our kids are the same gender or whether they're a boy and a girl, we are different parents mm-hmm. with each child because the child is individual. But we also hopefully grow and change with how we approach parenting with each child differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I was throwing somebody a baby shower years and years ago, and I had a book, and it was joking around in this book that with the first child, they drop a pacifier and you on the floor and you pick it up and you boil it and you rinse it and then you give it to them. With the second child, they drop the pacifier on the floor, you pick it up, you pop it in your mouth to get all the yuckies off, and then you stick it in theirs.
Yep.
With the third child, you tell the dog to go fetch it and bring it to you.
I would say that's highly accurate. That's what I did with my kids. That is so funny.
We're not the same parents with our kids, so it would make sense that you and your siblings would go through the loss of your mother from a different perspective based on your individual relationships with her and where she was in the stream of her life as a parent with each one of you.
Right. Yep.
Secondly, what I have learned, and that was one thing, you know, my sister, she died on September 27th, 2018. So we just passed the 2 year mark. And the year that it happened, it was a traumatic event. I have written about it on my blog post that is password protected. So if you want permission to read it, you got to ask me directly for it. And you've read it. You know, it was sudden. It was what most people would consider a traumatic event. And the first year, so the end of 2018, I was very busy trying to figure out what happened, protect her name, protect her reputation, support my parents, make sure that the friends that she had stayed in contact with as an adult were notified because she had moved around to several different states, and manage all of that. The second year came around and my mom needed to handle that first anniversary a certain way. And I went and did that with her. And while I found some healing, I was still very much concerned with how she was managing to get through that 1 year anniversary herself. And I came to the realization that I was still in shock. At that point, I was still not absorbing my own emotions at that point. And I was just coming out of that shock. Like February of 2020, I thought, okay, I think I'm seeing things a little clearer now. And then the pandemic hit. So this year I thought I'm taking some time for myself. Fortunately, my mother was handling her second year privately with my brother, which was good that they had that time. And my father was handling it in his own way. And I thought, I am going to hunker down and do what I personally need to do to work through it. And I'm much different sitting here today at this point on October 3rd than I was at this time yesterday and the day before. And I think that grief, what I've learned is it's not linear.
It's not.
You know, I don't even remember what year it was that the stages of grief became the real public thing and all of support groups, you know, there's anger, there's denial, there's this and that. And the impression that I had always had from that was you move from one stage to the other, like almost as a timeline. And while I have lost people that I've loved before, with this particular situation, my grief has been all over the map. And I'm in a few different support groups, and I've learned a lot, and I've read a few books on sibling loss, and I've learned a lot through that. And I have come to the conclusion that grief is a spiral. You have the event of the loss, and you have all of these emotions, and you will continue to experience those emotions. Something like we're talking about how trauma can trigger, it's an occurrence where you think back to an event. So you're in the present, but it evokes feelings either emotionally or somatically in the body of the past when the event happened. So you're getting further away from the event, but you're hitting the same emotions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. So it I have learned so much in just the past, you know, couple of months really, mm-hmm. about myself and about trauma and how I want to say it was Dr. Gabor Mate today when I was listening to his talk who said that when we are looking at a collective trauma, that we as individuals, we have our individual trauma and we're drawn to people mm-hmm. who have experienced similar things, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. we need to build our tribe. And we've heard a lot about building your tribe mm-hmm. and building your village. And when we do that, we seek out people who have the same viewpoints or the same mindsets that we do to help us make sense of what we're feeling. Mm-hmm. That can be beneficial, but it can also exclude us from being able to see somebody else's point of view.
That's true.
Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you're surrounding yourself with people who are like-minded, mm-hmm. and so all you do is talk to each other about how what you're feeling is right and normal, mm-hmm. and then you all of a sudden can start to view a different group of people going through something similar but with a different outlook as being not correct. Mm-hmm. So in that way, having this collective can be detrimental, but as individuals, we can generate our own healing as a collective when we look at each other and we support one another. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced pregnancy loss, but if I use what he calls the traumatic, if we can look at it through a trauma lens, mm-hmm. I have experienced trauma. I know what those feelings are. I can look at you and I can extend empathy and compassion to you and give you the space that you need to say, this is what it feels like. I would venture to say that you know two dates, the due date for that baby and the date that you lost that baby.
Yep, absolutely.
And you'll never forget it. Mm-hmm. And I think when we have somebody in our lives who has experienced a pregnancy or infant loss, we need to talk about it. Would you agree as having...
Yeah, absolutely. It's part, I think, for me, and it's part of the healing process to be able to put feelings into words, especially when someone else understands, or even if when they attempt to understand, even for them to just listen, it's so soothing and it gives you kind of validation of your feelings.
Right. Yeah, because for you, as soon as you got a positive pregnancy test, that was a baby.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That was a baby, and that should be acknowledged. It's not. And that's why I hate the word miscarriage. I know that that is the word that is applied, but it doesn't seem like it matches the level of emotion that experience entails.
Yeah. And for me, the word miscarriage has always made it seem like the carrier had a defect of some sort. Like, it places blame on the womb instead of, you know, that sometimes things just don't go according to plan. So yeah, that word has always, it's not one of my favorites, but I do understand that's the technical term for that, for, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And with both of us being involved in doula work, what I have found is that doulas are often drawn. We feel drawn to this work. Mm-hmm. And you will usually find two camps, so to speak, of doulas who have been drawn into the birth work. And of course, when we're talking about anything like that, of course, there's the people like me who kind of fall in the middle. Mm-hmm. But you have doulas on one extreme, on one end of the spectrum, who feel like, I had such a beautiful, such an empowering, such an amazing, unmedicated, natural, vaginal birth that I want to help every woman mm-hmm. have that. And they see that potential in every single pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And then you have on the other end of the extreme, the doulas who say, I had such a horrible, such a traumatic birth, whether it was vaginal or in the OR, and I feel like things were done to me that I didn't consent to, and I want to save any other woman from having that experience. I want to be their voice. I want to educate them. And that's kind of the really interesting part of this is if we want to provide space for people to experience their pregnancies, experience their life events, no matter what they are, we can't determine for another person what's traumatic and what isn't. And if we are stuck as just speaking within the birth and pregnancy realm, if we are stuck firmly in one of those camps, then we could be projecting our own feelings and causing trauma. So we have to be very careful as doulas.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to bring any unnecessary bias to the situation, a situation that's already delicate and full of hormones and feelings. And yeah, that is so true. You can, I think being in the middle and kind of being able to bridge that gap is very important to the extent that people are able, because you want to be understanding. Just like if there's a mom that decides that she wants to have a scheduled C-section, you know, you can't, oh my God, I can't believe you would do that. You have to be careful with how we react to that, because it's their body, their baby. And
Right. And, you know, when you were telling the story about the person who was trying to encourage you to schedule your C-section, as I was listening to you, I was thinking the uncertainty of when a baby would be born could be something she feels negatively about, that that some people have a very strong need to live very scheduled lives and to know what's around every corner. And that may or may not be a result of a past trauma. It's neither here nor there. That's what they need. And as doulas, we meet our clients where they are, not where we want them to be.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And in order to do that, we have to listen. So I know one thing that I'm doing differently is I am offering just support during pregnancy or postpartum, not postpartum support like, you know, being at their house and taking care of their baby and all of that, not the hands-on stuff, but the actual discussion. Because of my additional training that I've been getting through with trauma and how to help women and birth givers who have experienced trauma, and because I've come from my own place of healing from various traumas, I want to make myself available. And so that's kind of where I've been growing as a doula in, you know, 104 births later.
And I love all of the time and effort that you have been putting into trauma, not just for your own benefit. You're someone who you see a need, and then like you are gonna work on it, and you're gonna make it happen. And even just the tidbit that I've been getting from you have been so extremely helpful for my own. And my mother passed away over 20 years ago. So, you know, when you're talking about the spiral and all of those things, that's still helpful to me 20 years after experiencing that event. So I just, whoever is able to get in contact with you and go through this with you, I can feel the benefit for them already. I hope if there are birth givers out there that are going through things or have gone through things in the past, that they would seek you out, because having that support, it's everything. I mean, it's everything. I'm not even expecting, and you know, I'm like, thank you for this information. So especially to have be at such a delicate time in your life and have someone that has equipped themselves with an arsenal of information and unbiased opinions, especially to me, is just, it's just amazing. It's just one more reason that I'm like, I want to be like Exy when I grow up.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you so much. I am a work in progress. So, you know, it's a forward movement that I find myself on. But that's the thing. We need to, you know, and that was one of the talks that I was listening today to. I would turn the pages to find the name of the doctor, but I would make too much noise. But just talking about being open, you know, I think Dr. Gabor Mate may have even said that we can't heal from what we're not acknowledging. Mm-hmm. And when we acknowledge it, it's going to hurt. Mm-hmm. And we have to be open to that emotion and that feeling, that visceral feeling, mm-hmm. and stick with ourselves. Mm-hmm. We can't give up on ourselves.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because then we'll be stuck.
Right.
And, you know, when you're stuck in trauma, whether that is because you come from a war-torn country, mm-hmm. or because you've experienced a medical trauma, or you had a traumatic childhood, whatever, a car accident that was especially mm-hmm. traumatic. Again, it's not the event, it's the perception to the person. But you can get stuck to where you're just reliving those feelings over and over and over again. And, you know, I'm not going to become a counselor, a social worker, or anything like that. But I feel like with this training and with this awareness, both of us, you and I both, because mm-hmm. we do plan on approaching clients from, you know, a dual perspective here, mm-hmm. we can assist and support and validate, because that's what anybody wants. Why are people yelling and screaming in bullhorns? It's because they feel like they haven't been heard.
Right. Yep.
And that's another hallmark of trauma. Mm-hmm. You feel like your voice has been silenced. So you have to get louder, and mm-hmm. you have to get bigger, and you have to get more in people's faces. Mm-hmm. So as human beings, we want validation. We want support. We don't always know where to get it. Or, like with domestic violence, we are told things such as, well, he didn't hit you, mm-hmm. so how can it be considered domestic abuse? Mm-hmm. When in reality, domestic abuse has a wide range of many different actions that can be done to a person to keep them within a relationship that is all about power and control. Hmm. That's what it comes down to. Yep. So,
and can be done in such a subtle way, and the human brain tends to react more slowly to subtle changes. It doesn't pick up on them as quickly. So in a lot of situations, it's been one subtle thing, and, you know, then it usually progresses. And but to an outside person, it's usually shocking for them to see that the final stage of that progression, because we don't always pick up on those cues ahead of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have learned that domestic violence, interpersonal violence can be as subtle or hidden as technical or digital abuse. So if you have, if the person that in your relationship is telling you who you can be friends with on social media, what sites you can be visiting. They could put keystroke trackers on your computer, or always be going back and looking at your history. Mm. That is a form of domestic abuse. Mm. So it can go from there. And it usually is very gradual. That's the other thing about it, is for the person on the receiving end, a lot of times it happens so gradually that they are not aware that they're in an abusive situation until the escalation to physical begins. And even then, a lot of times, the first or second strike that's physical, there's so much apologies afterwards, the honeymoon phase with the flowers and the jewelry, and, you know, I just had a bad moment, or I had too much to drink, or whatever the excuse is. Mm. And you think it was only once, it won't happen again. Mm. But because this is a problem coming from the person who is the abuser, the victim on the receiving end, they can't guarantee it's not going to happen again.
Right.
Because they're not in control of that person's emotions and behaviors. Mm. So, you know, I didn't want to spend a whole, this is not a domestic violence episode. Mm-hmm. I could certainly do one, but I will be putting links in the show notes for some resources, and I will continue throughout the month of October posting things on my social media for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Are you on any social media? Are you taking an active role as a doula now, sharing anything that you find on your social media?
Not yet, but I definitely want to. I've added my training to like my LinkedIn profile and my Instagram and Facebook, but I think I may want to create an Instagram page for, you know, to showcase myself as a doula in training. And so, yeah, that's something that I'm definitely working on. So
awesome. I may need your help. I think, yeah, that, well, I did not have a professional Instagram until this year.
Oh, okay.
I've had Twitter for years. Mm-hmm. I was actually on Twitter before I was on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I was really active. There was, back in the day, there was, hashtags, which are still something, but we would have a doula chat once a week. And I remember vaguely sitting there with a couple different devices and keeping up with all of these running conversations mm-hmm. on doula work. And I think that's kind of slowed down a little bit, but I do have at Massage Doula is my Twitter handle. Mm-hmm. And my Instagram handle is @massage_doula_CBE. And then my Facebook page, the Tranquil Touch for Women, Tranquil Touch Therapeutic Massage for Women. I always shorten it. It's such a long business name, but those are my business ones. And I really do find comfort in having my business and my personal ones separated mm-hmm. because, you know, my clients don't need to know everything that's going on in my personal life and
right.
what I had for lunch. And,
yeah. you know.
Occasionally yeah. I'll share that publicly, you know, on my business pages, but I don't think that it's necessary to do it all the time. Not that I don't even know if you care as my friend what I had for lunch.
Well, yeah, because you always have like such healthy, interesting options. So yeah, I would like to know what you had for lunch.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny talking about healthy options. So I'm a huge grapefruit fan. I love to eat grapefruit. Mm-hmm. But I have a very sensitive palate mm-hmm. I'm not sensitive as far as I can taste something and say, oh, I can taste the rosemary in that mm-hmm. or no, I'm not like that. I have a sensitive palate in that if something is a little bit tart, mm-hmm. I get that really, really sour face. Like mm-hmm. my sense of tartness and bitterness in my mouth is very high. So mm-hmm. I have to eat very sweet fruit. So mm-hmm. The grapefruit, the only grapefruit I can eat is pink grapefruit, the ruby red grapefruit that's on the sweeter side. Mm-hmm. But right now, like the last several months, and I want to say it's because of the pandemic or maybe it's because it's not quite citrus season, but my husband and my son, who do most of the grocery shopping, have brought home grapefruit for me, and it has not said whether it's yellow grapefruit or ruby red grapefruit. And so it's not until I peel it and I start, you know, I kind of look at it. I'm like, that's looking a little pale. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. I put it in my mouth and I get the funny face. So what I've decided to do is just juice it. I have one of those really nice juicers, not the really fancy ones. Mm-hmm. But I have one that you can put like pretty much a whole orange in
or
a whole apple in. Mm-hmm. So today I juiced like 6 oranges and 2 Honeycrisp apples and 3 grapefruit. And it was just the right amount of sweet. Like the Honeycrisp apples brought and the oranges brought just enough sweet to it. And the grapefruit was a nice hit. I thought about taking a picture, but.
Now, see, that sounds picture worthy to me. That sounds great.
But yeah, it is. I try to eat healthy, but that's a lot because of my physical health. It's not because I'm trying to follow a fad or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. Although it's funny because the fad of intermittent fasting mm-hmm. has become popular. And at first I was like, what is intermittent fasting? Mm-hmm. So my husband is like, oh, you know, someone we know is trying it and this is what they're doing. And I looked at him and I said, well, doesn't everybody do that? Like, doesn't everybody stop eating at
yeah,
dinner
at a certain
and
point. Mm-hmm.
Then they don't eat again until the morning? And I realize that a lot of people don't, must not be doing that. There must be a lot of people that sit down in the evening, like after dinner has passed. And now I will have a glass of wine or something. And mm-hmm. I guess that if you're intermittent fasting, that is
breaks
a no-no.
Your fast. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm not technically doing it, but I don't eat food mm-hmm. after a certain point because I find that I don't sleep well. I mean,
that's
I don't
true.
Sleep well anyway, but eating late, it's just,
yeah,
I don't know. I wake up usually and I have a, like I didn't digest overnight.
Right. That's exactly what it is. Because at first someone from my office said, oh, that's totally like a millennial thing. Millennials came up with a new term because they don't eat breakfast. And I thought, oh, well, that's kind of funny and kind of accurate. So then I started looking into it. And overnight, you don't. Your body's burning all this energy to digest your food if you eat late. And so you're not getting that restful sleep and your body isn't able to do what it needs to do. And then apparently there's some ties to like your glucose levels. And it's good for people that are diabetic because it helps with their insulin levels. So, but I kind of intermittent fast in just the lazy way because I don't feel like always having breakfast. So I just thought, I'm intermittent fasting this morning.
Yeah. I had so many allergies. I was such a sick kid that I couldn't eat most foods that are considered breakfast foods. So like eggs, I couldn't eat. Any of like even bread, I could eat bread, but I had to be very careful about it. Cereal was the only cereal I could eat was Rice Krispies, and I had to eat it with water because I couldn't have milk, and they didn't have all the non-dairy alternative milks back when we were little. So I don't really eat breakfast. Coffee, I will, that is my breakfast. I usually have 2 good sized cups of coffee every morning. And then around 11, I'll eat something.
Yep.
But it's not breakfasty at all.
Yeah, breakfast, I mean, I feel like you can have anything for breakfast. I would like to normalize more vegetables for breakfast. I love vegetables in the morning. And
yeah.
I like spinach and tomato. You know, I'll make an omelet or something and it's just full of veggies. I love it.
Yeah. I think the hardest part is the time that it takes, like the forethought of preparation to make sure that you buy those fresh ingredients and then you actually use the fresh ingredients before they go bad. And then the time that it takes to make it.
Yeah.
That's what I have the hardest time with. I'm not a strong cook. I'm not a confident cook. So things like that kind of, it's a lot for me.
Yeah.
But my husband's favorite meal type is breakfast foods. He could eat breakfast foods no matter what time of day or night. And in fact, I remember the first time that we went to New York City, we were staying in the East Village and he looked out of our window and it was, I don't know, it was probably at least 10. It might have even been midnight. He looked out and saw a waffle truck outside of our window.
Oh,
and he
wow.
was like, I have to go down and I have to try this. And I'm looking at him going, it's waffles. You got a few hours until it's waffle time. He's like, no, waffle time, breakfast food time, any time of the day or night.
No wonder he and my husband get along well because my husband loves to go to any breakfast food establishment at any time of the day. And he's a breakfast loving man as well.
Yeah. Well, we will have to, you know, at some point, I know that the restaurants and all the dining is open, but we are not really eating out. But once that all passes and we have no more concerns about sitting within 6 feet of each other so we can have a nice conversation, we will have to go out for a breakfast meal together.
Right.
So
this was awesome, and I'm so excited to see everybody again in 3 weeks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Doula to Doula. Don't forget to subscribe in your favorite podcast app.